Well, thank you, Jan, for coming back on the show. This is so cool. This is actually episode number 24, take two, because we already recorded an episode at the Boot in Düsseldorf and the audio was terrible. Thank you so much, Jan, for taking time. I'm going to introduce you real quick. You're a foil designer for Ensis in Germany, and you've been with Ensis for a year. Let's just have the listeners get to know you. And maybe you can tell us, how do you get on the water? How do you get into water sports in the first place? Have you always been on the water as a kid as well?
Yes, first of all, thanks for having me here. Thanks for the invitation. It's really a pleasure to talk to you and to talk to you again as well. So water has been part of my life since ever, since I was born. I started sailing in the Optimist. I had my proper sailing license even before I had a moped or any other vehicle. I spent a lot of time for surfing, windsurfing, raced regattas, and sailing. I developed a wave energy device for power or for energy generation for a couple of years. So yeah, and now I'm in the foil industry, so I can definitely say that water was part of my entire life, sure.
When you were a kid, you sailed Optimist. Did you sail regattas as well?
Yeah, I did racing.
How old are you? Because we might have sailed against each other at some point.
I'm 40. How old are you?
I'm 38, so actually, maybe
Okay.
we have to check that later on because I was at
Please.
Lake Constance a couple of times to sail regattas. Usually, no wind, but yeah, we might have met before. So let's check that later. You're a mechanical engineer, and you said you built that power plant, wave power plant. Can you maybe explain what that is exactly?
It's a device, or was meant to be a device to generate electricity from ocean waves. So no tidal power plant, really a wave energy power plant. It was a buoyant body, half submerged, half immersed, so close to the surface with three ropes, and it, got aligned to the wave crest and activated by the waves, and the ropes transmit the force and the power. So you could generate energy from that.
That is very interesting. But that didn't work out, right, at the end.
It worked out. Definitely, it worked. We fed energy into the grid. That was really successful. But the solar price dropped at that time
Oh, okay.
dramatically. And the concept works. That was definitely a success. But on the other hand, still the price per kilowatt hour was not reachable. So yeah, I left that.
All right, well, that's too bad. But when did you start like designing foils? Have you started wing foiling and thought, well, this is cool, I want to do that? Or was that even before? Because obviously foils were there way before wing foiling and surf foiling and whatnot.
I didn't start with designing foils. My way into the foil industry was more through other parts that were needed, like foot strap plugs, like injection molding parts for surfboards, for foil boards, wind foil boards. And the thing that I design, everything that is below the board, came later on. So the core to design the foil itself came later than the contact to the industry.
But when you did these other parts, were you thinking like, all right, people are going to need that, I'm going to design that and go to companies? Or were you already like, were people hiring and you thought like, well, I'm a mechanical engineer, I can build that, I'm going to help you out. How did you get into the companies actually?
Andy Wittmann, maybe known as Shaper from Indiana and Ensis, foil developer at Indiana and Ensis, owner of the custom board company WAAG here in Konstanz, connected me. So that was really my way into this world. I came to Konstanz, saw this workshop, got really big eyes, and immediately started working there. And we built boards together, I think, for about 2 years, and that was the time when I started doing this injection molding parts, for instance.
This is so cool. So you worked for him or with him back
With
then?
him,
With him.
depends. When I helped him building the boards, and his partner, that was more for him, and starting this injection molding parts was more with him. We are really close friends now, so you can't distinguish that clearly.
And he's such a cool guy as well. He's so knowledgeable. He's done it all. It feels like. And I was at the boat. We went for dinner once, and it was super interesting. He has so many stories. Maybe I should ask him to come on the show. at another time, but let's come back to you. Eventually, you started with the foils. How did that happen? Did you feel like, well, I have this idea, I want to design that, build that? Or was Andy saying like, all right, these are some guys, they need some foils, they need innovation. How did you start with the foils?
I think it came through pump foiling. I think I was quite early dock starter or pump foiler. I learned yesterday that my power pumper head number is 123, so quite easy. I had a longer talk with Devin, and he told me that number 123.
That is so cool.
I think it was quite early.
And when was that? Mm-hmm. 2-3 years ago, something like that.
At least, yeah. I checked that. You can.
Yeah, we're gonna
add that.
Picture.
I was definitely not the first.
And,
I was definitely. Now he always continues with writing the number straight into the head.
Oh,
so
really?
Everyone who will receive a power pumper head right now will know his number because it's written in the head.
Must be in the like 5 digits or something, like, right? Must have been many people.
We didn't talk about that, but we can ask him. Yeah.
Yeah, actually, he's also going to be on the show. He has a lot to do at the moment. He's going to be on the show like in maybe 10 episodes. So subscribe, follow, whatever. But again, let's get back to you. You started pump foiling early, you said?
I started pump foiling quite early. I was definitely not the first. And I think that gave me the experience to know what is needed to have a good pump foil. I had experience with different foils, and yeah, I think in this surrounding here that was quite a good base to start with, and I was quite, yeah.
What wings did you pump? What brands did you pump?
Indiana definitely, and Axis. At that time there was this one beginner foil from Indiana, which is still a top recommendation. This first it was called 1100p, and afterwards 1190p.
Those were the ones that you stopped over the fuselage, right?
Yes, that was
first
one.
Yeah,
the connection you never
can never take off.
You never take off once it has seen the salt water, and you do not remove it immediately.
All right, but then you got approached by Andy, by someone to build your own.
Or how? Yeah,
but you've never designed a foil before.
No, but when you're interested into something, you can do it. I think my studies mainly teach me not the knowledge, but how to get the knowledge, and not being frustrated on that way, but dig into it deep.
Can you maybe let's get into that. Like, what was the first foil you actually designed yourself?
That was 1396 from Indiana, which was meant to be the perfect flat water paddle up foil. So at that time we saw this Kalama shape longboard, and the first guys going out of the water just by pumping without any paddle. So that was clear. Okay, we need something in that range.
What was your approach there? You start reading, you looked at other foils, and like, oh, that looks nice, that looks logical, I'm going to take it from there. How was your approach as a first-time designer?
Aviation, first of all. So everything scales quite nice between air and water. So definitely everything that you can find about aviation. Other brands, I mean, the cheapest prototype is what you can buy from others and just test it.
Obviously,
get a feeling, measure it, try to understand what their thoughts might be, what it was meant for, what you like it for, what is good, what is bad, what you think should be adjusted.
Works.
A lot of literature, a lot of internet, a lot of
reading, but you still have then to learn like the CAD program, right? Which is also, I imagine you having some image of what you want to do in your head, but then you have to digitalize that.
Yeah, but that's at least in the first try, that's quite easy, because as a designer and engineer, cut is my right hand, or my right hand is cut. I'm not sure it's really built into my right hand. And I think it just becomes more difficult when the foil gets more complex and a mold is required, and just the precision in the foil needs to be higher than it was needed 4 or 5 years ago. 4 or 5 years ago, you could send the factory any file and they would do something that would be sufficient for the market. And today we really have a very high level at all brands, and you really need to be precise on every detail.
Yeah, you said that a lot of your work is actually talking to the factory to verify that they do everything exactly as you want them. Maybe also for me, but also for some listeners, you had at the boat, you had this nice little model with this like cross section. I don't know if you call it cross section of a foil of a front wing. Do you have it with you?
Yeah.
Can you maybe just like quickly, yeah, tell me again, how does the foil work? Something with different streamlines? I'm not sure anymore.
I have to laugh because it seems like this gets somehow my signature question. This question, why
was
does it fly?
Bernoulli?
yeah. There are just two simple reasons. One is, I would call it deflection. So the water hits the lower surface, gets deflected downwards. And maybe you remember Newton's third law. Every action has a reaction into the opposite direction, which means the water that gets deflected downwards creates force that points upwards, which is lift, which is what we needed to fly. This is the first aspect. The second aspect is related to the fact that the distance of the top surface is longer than on the lower surface. So if two particles arrive at the front and they have to split up, they need to arrive at the trailing edge at the same time. And the one that has to travel further needs to go faster to arrive at the same time, which means the velocity on the top surface is higher. And this velocity difference between the lower surface and the top surface creates pressure difference that is part of the Bernoulli effect, which says the faster the velocity, the lower the pressure, vice versa. And yeah, the pressure on the top side is lower than on the bottom side, and that creates lift as well.
And the bigger that difference from the top to the bottom, the more lift you have.
Sure.
So the more,
and the larger the surface.
This thickness, is that the chord or what is that called?
The thickness.
Just the thickness.
Distance
what
from
is the chord?
The distance, the straight distance from the leading edge to the trailing edge. So, sorry, exactly that distance here.
Okay. All right.
So, yeah.
Thank you very much for that basic lesson for me. So you built your foil, you said you looked at aviation, and I sent you a little audio message because this afternoon I was outside and we have a lot of birds. We have like this Milan, this bird of prey kind of, and they glide around the air, and they have the wings. They look kind of like one of your foils, one that you made, the stride. And then I saw the back wing, let's call it their tail feathers. They look different. They had this like V shape kind of, and I thought, well, if that works for birds, shouldn't that also work for us foiling? Or is that just because due to the feathers and not carbon fiber that they have to build it like that? Have to be built like that. Can you say anything about that?
First of all, I really liked the question and I had to laugh a bit, and I thought about it for a couple of minutes. And of course, first of all, bionics in mechanical engineering, bionics are always a great inspiration and to check how nature did it and try to transfer that into really technical, human technical solutions. Regarding the Milan, I had no time to really did a proper investigation on it, but I think that the tail feathers do not create a downforce like our stabilizers do. So that is a huge difference.
So it's more like steering maybe.
Yes. Of course they have to stabilize as well, but I'm not sure if they're really creating downforce, because it's inefficient. Usually you don't want to do it. And birds, all of the birds, they can adjust the camber, they can adjust their profile sections, like when you sit in an airplane and you see that they also can vary their profile section for super high lift with higher drag for starting and landing, reaching lower velocities, and just using the proper profile section for traveling velocity. That is something that is not possible right now in hydrofalls. We just have this super stiff, stable, continuous system that can't be adapted so far. Of course, there are visions to do it, to blow up something or to pump it, and you get thicker profile section for more low end and so on. But I think this is still, it's not reachable yet. It's still a journey to go there. But interesting to investigate that.
Thank you very much.
The only stabilizer that popped into my mind, I think, is from Armstrong. They really did stabilizer called V something that really looks very similar to this Tay Feathers. But I've never pumped or faulted, so I don't know anything about the characteristics of this Armstrong V-shape stabilizer.
Oh, yeah,
I'm not sure if it's part of the current program.
All right. Well, if it were any good, people would have copied it, and it would be all over, right?
So it still can come. Good. We're the journey just began, so it still can come.
All right.
Maybe you just pop this idea up, and next week every brand will release a V-shaped stabilizer. Yeah.
Let's talk about your work. You're only digital. You told me you're not actually like working with carbon fiber, but you're digital. And my first question is, if you design something, if you have your idea, you design it, and then you go pump it, do you test them yourself? And if you test them, is it usually, yes, that was what I was going for? Or sometimes you're like, well, that is nice, or ooh, that shouldn't be like that. How is the difference, the difference in your math and the feel? Is there a difference?
Sure, there always is, because there are no values in the simulation telling you, this is a great pump foil on the scale from 1 to 10. This is pump foil. Yeah, there are lots of different tastes and pump styles and priorities. What makes a pump foil a good pump foil? And of course, when I test something, there's a bit of everything. Sometimes I'm really surprised. Sometimes I find something I've never expected. Sometimes I'm surprised that it's really bad and you learn something from it because it's really bad.
Do you have an example? Maybe a good one or a bad one?
A really good one was a profile variation in the latest Maniac step, the 155. Where varied profile sections in the stabilizer and pumped them and expected a few differences. But one difference I didn't expect at all is, or a criteria that I had not so clearly in my mind, maybe describes that better, is the capability of finding the proper glide point. So what I mean with glide point is you pump up to the maximum height without reaching the foil, and you just stand still and ride down the entire height of the mast. And often with a setup that is too agile in the pitch direction, you lose some height by finding that point of the right balance, keeping you the speed, not investing too much of your potential height and getting to the maximum distance. And with this profile variation, to come back to the question of these stabilizers I did there, there was one profile that really surprised me in that aspect of finding this balance point for the perfect glide really, really easy without losing other important characteristics like pumpability, that you can push it, that it gives you control and so on. It was quite positive. I never looked for that aspect, but I found it by accident, to be honest.
Was that the one you gave me to try at the boat as well?
Yes, that one.
It was really true. It was super nice, really. And as soon as you're in there, you're super stable again. So it's really, for me, for my abilities, it's super, because I'm not the best pumper. So that's really nice. Without giving away your secrets, can you tell us what the thing is, why it works so well? Or is that too much of a secret? And you say, like, yeah,
that's,
I'm not gonna...
That's too much of a secret.
All right, good. So you just go and test it by, what's the name again?
155.
All right, the main. So you just have to go and look for it yourself. Yeah. Good. Then what? We're not going to get into that. Which foils from Enzis are yours?
The Stride series.
The Stride series. So the pump series.
That's the pump series, exactly. There are two winging series, the Pacer for the Discoverers, the Infinity for the Advanced and Professionals, and the Stride as a pump series.
All right, very nice. Yes, I tried the ones that you brought at the boat. It was really nice. And for me, it's really an easy foil, which is nice, which, yeah, suit my abilities, which is really cool.
Easy, but without being excited for an advanced rider, that is always important for me.
A foil
can't be too easy to start and to dock start. That can't be too easy, or you step down one size and then it's challenging for you again. That can't be too easy. The takeoff has to be easy, but the foil needs to deliver the right stability combined with the agility if you're a professional or advanced rider to make it not boring. That's also
super
important.
It's not boring at all. No.
There are easy foils I step onto and then, okay, what to do now?
Yeah. No, really. No, they're not boring at all. Don't get me wrong. Just a question. If you design these foils, is there your signature on these foils, or can we see that Jan made those, like made by Jan or something?
Unfortunately not, no.
So,
but that's okay for me. I think they have my handwriting. Somebody who knows me will recognize that they are made by me. And other than that, that's completely fine. Yeah.
But you were also in charge of, or in the team of building that monoblock system, those connectors, right?
Yep.
Can you tell me maybe how did that happen? Did the guys from Enzis come to you and say, we need to change, we need to have something better? Or was it your idea? And he said, we need to change something here. It's not perfect yet.
I did the work. I designed it fully. Still, I got support from the other team members, but I would really say that that was my main work. But the initial task that we have to do better was not my idea, to be honest. So I was not really convinced that we need it or will need it. And just that I made it, I realized, okay, it's so much cooler. It's so much more efficient. It's one connection less. It's less screws. It's really, yeah, it's so sexy in the shape.
Why is that?
That's
why is
ace.
Was it so good? What makes it a great connection?
No connection is the best connection. So you save one connection between the foil itself and the mast or your feet, whatever. You save three screws at that point. You don't have to care about screw length or position of the screws, of the individual screws. It gives me as a designer the freedom to connect every single foil with the fuselage part, with the integrated fuselage part, in the size that the foil requires. So the small foils can get a very thin and tiny fuselage, which is integrated, and the big pump foils, which need the maximum stiffness, they get really a big hump there
ones.
To make it stiff. With the aluminium fuselage, you have to decide for one connection, and that will remain the same for the entire foil range. So you will find foils where it's at the limit, and you will find the small foils where it's way over dimensioned.
All right, that makes a lot of sense. Have you tried building something or designing something without screws as well?
We thought about it. I haven't done it because I'm too skeptic still. The system that will be released is, at least from the videos, quite convincing. I think it's well done. I really like it.
The one where you like put it in and then have this hook?
Exactly. I had it not in my hands so far, but I like the ideas behind, and I can clearly see what the thoughts are, and I'm really looking forward to seeing it live in my hands. Yeah, but the screw is quite good.
For me, honestly, I don't like them.
Because I don't like them neither, but technically it solves the problem quite well. There's a reason why there are so many screws around us.
Yeah.
From the technical point of view, it's just too easy and too good.
All right. Well, all right. Then that's just what it is. How is your job at Enzis? Or are you there? Are you hired by Enzis? Are you a freelancer? Do you wake up in the morning and have a list of chores to do? Or how is the work organized?
I'm a freelance engineer, that's correct. But it's quite continuous, although the workload is varying for sure. And I have a long list with things to do.
What's next?
Always need to adjust the priorities. Next? Sorry, pardon?
Can you tell us what's next, or is that secret as well?
Next for tomorrow.
Maybe not for tomorrow. No,
that's
like
secret.
No,
that's secret. Sorry.
All right. Good. So we just have to.
But there are also lots of quite boring tasks like quality control, quality checks, feedback forms for the manufacturers, and arranging proper design packages with the graphical design and the drawings and the CAD models, the 3D files, and so on. It's getting all that together is a huge part of just communication with lots of different parts.
Have you ever visited the factory?
Not yet. Unfortunately, there are several factories. Yeah, I hope I can do so in the future, but it's quite hard to be there just when they manufacture stuff for us, and then they do maybe one series and not the entire different models. Yeah, we will see.
All right. I think the Enzis team is super cool at the boat there. So much fun. So many enthusiastic people. Also with Michi and Baltz, they're super hyped, and it's like it's addictive, and they spread that joy. How is it in the team? Do you come together often, or is it just like you get some mails, maybe some phone calls, and all remote?
I have really frequent and good contact to Mickey as the leader of the development team, and really doing mainly the tests and the feedback and the requests. And the other team, they meet not regularly, but we have meetings for sure at the headquarters. We have yearly meetings like this dealer meeting in Spain yearly, where we meet each other. And it's really nice being in contact with all of them. And just as you said, it's not only Balz and Mickey as the showman in front with a good mood and always having a good time and a party and being easy. There are also lots of people behind in the background which support the company and the good mood a lot. I think it's one of the Enzis principles is really to focus on working together with people you like and you like just spending your work time with. And that's what I really like. And yeah, for me also ensures that I work together with people I like as well and like to work with. That's really part of the good mood and what I really like about Enzis.
Are you 100% with Enzis, or are you doing work for other people as well? Maybe other brands as well?
Other brands and other customers from completely different sections, like medical engineering, like other fun sports, like automotive suppliers, really diverse.
All right. And still work with Andy as well?
Yes, sure.
That's so cool. So, but let's say...
I don't have that much epoxy in my hands like a couple of years ago. I regret that, but you can't do anything. I like to work with my hands, and from time to time, I like to do it, but you can't do anything, everything.
And you're a dad, you have a kid. Do you still have time to get on the water yourself? You were on the water today as there was wind. There's not a lot of wind at Lake Constance. Do you still have time for that?
To be honest, it got less, sure. And I think that is the main reason that makes pump foiling so attractive for me, because you have quick travel to your spot, you're ready quickly, you can have a break and do a picnic with your family and go back on the water, and you can see them, you can wave, and the conditions are always nice when you like pump foiling. Others like hanging around at the beach. It's not like getting sand blasted at the North Sea in a storm. I mean, what should your family do there? That's just stupid. You have to do this with your with your friends and colleagues, which do the same stuff, but not with your family.
But still, a question I ask all my guests, if you can choose the location, the wind, the weather, the sport, which sport would you do and why?
Surfing, probably. Really the old-fashioned surfing, because conditions, perfect conditions for surfing are so rare that I would, if I have a free wish, I would, choose that.
Do you or did you surf at Lake Constance or the little one just next to it? I saw people surfing there, like wave riding.
Wasn't me, at least.
I'm not sure if it was you.
No, definitely not. I haven't done it.
Like at Reichenau, or what's the island called there?
Yeah, Reichenau. Yeah. And where can you surf there?
Yeah, I saw people surfing there, like with short boards.
A wave.
Yeah, wave surfing.
Good.
All right, but it wasn't you. So you will go surfing without any crowd, which is always the problem. You were on the water with the Roger today, with the Parawing.
Yeah.
Is that something you're going to continue doing? Or is that something like, I'm trying it, but I'm going back to the wing because it's more comfortable, it's more stable and whatnot.
You're a beginner again, and you need the motivation to leave out a couple of really, really excellent wing foiling days. That's quite a tough price. On the other hand, I always like to feel something new and to get to know it. It was really interesting again today. I learned a lot. Learning curve is always, it's quite steep in the beginning, as everywhere. I definitely will continue it. For me, it's quite clear that there are disadvantages, and you always get the profit from a power wing when your idea is to peg it away and do some downwinders. When you're just going from left to right, I don't see that there's so much of an advantage. That's not the case where you should use a power wing. But for downwinding, it's way more realistic to learn downwinding with a power wing compared to pure paddle. And I'm really
excited.
Were
you going left and right today, or did you pack it up and went down with the waves as well?
No, it was my very first session. We come back to the question, how often can you go in the water? Yeah. So I think the Roger has been here since the last week of December or the first week of January, and today was really my first session, to be honest.
Wow.
So I was going left and right, definitely. I drifted leewards by accident, to be honest. Yes, sure, as well. It was not easy to keep the height without foiling the entire time, but it gave really good feeling what might be possible there, and you need to learn it. I mean,
so you can maybe from a standpoint of a beginner, I'm sorry to call you a beginner, but
I'm a discoverer.
All right, good. Thank you.
Nobody wants to be a beginner.
What board and foil did you use? Because when we look online, we see amazing images of super riders like Mithy, like Balz. They have small or mid-length boards. They probably have super small foils as well. They make it look so easy. But as a discoverer, what board and foil do you choose or suggest to people who want to start rogering?
I think the new mid-length shapes are very, very good for trying it in a large size. Definitely my one today was 120 liters, a downwind shape from Indiana, and it felt suitable. So really, I wouldn't change anything for the next session. I had a Stride foil, the smallest one, the 1360,
60,
which was, I think, perfect. If your goal is more to get up early, I would choose the Stride 7040. But depending on the wind range, both make sense for me. As long as you don't have ocean swell and huge swell, and today was really still, I would almost call it sheltered conditions. I had the wind conditions were above what I would recommend for the 3 square meters, and due to very gusty conditions also below, it really covered the entire range. There was not a long fetch length on the water, so no real wave to ride down. That was not the goal for today, for the first session. So depending on that, the Stride Ace ones I would recommend for a beginner, definitely.
What about the mast? What length of mast?
I took the 75. Today, I think the difference was not too big. I think for the seaweed, it was good to have the shorter one. But
you still have a lot of seaweed at Lake Constance?
The water level drops quite far before the snow melts. So water level is low, and then the seaweed is higher appears. Up than it appears. It appears.
Let's talk about seaweed. In summer, Lake Constance is pretty warm. Not a lot of movement, at least when I was there. Do you have a lot of people pump foiling? Is it getting bigger? Or are there a lot of swimmers as well? Is it possible to even pump foil at Lake Constance?
Generally.
Yeah, like in summer, there are a lot of people around.
Sure. Of course, you have to. In the wintertime, you have a lot more piers and docks where no ships are at that time. There are bodies, so swimming areas, which are perfect in the wintertime, but there are still lots of spots left for the summertime. And
the seaweed is not an issue?
Depending on the spot, you can also go to spots where it's not so much of an issue.
Because I was at Lake Beal this like fall, and sometimes he had these huge patches of seaweed where if you didn't look for a second, you ran into them, and it's just like 3-4 meters of diameter of patches of seaweed, which is really ugly and difficult to get around, really.
Yeah.
And you have kids, right? You have one or two kids?
One and a half. So there's a boy 2.5 years old. And yeah, in true fashion book style, there will be a little daughter joining us next summer. And right now, old, yeah.
That is even less time for you to go on the water, but super happy time still.
Again, yes.
So the boy's not on foil yet, I imagine, but he looks at you and yeah, maybe joins you.
He mimics the movement. He just he bends his knees and swinging his arms. And the most important thing is a big splash at the end, throwing on the floor and screaming splash. And then he's just laughing and doing it again. For a couple
that
of
is,
times.
That is super cool. Listen, Jan, I'm actually pretty much through with my list. Is there anything you want to add? You want to tell the audience something about you or maybe some future plans? What's coming for you? Except for your daughter, obviously.
What's coming? I just sent out a really long mask to the factory. Ooh. Pretty long, pretty slim. Especially 12.8 millimeters is the maximum thickness of the mast.
How long is it?
Yeah, 96 centimeters.
Nice. That is interesting. Is that a 3D printed model?
That is a 3D printed model. Yeah, I really need that. Everything on the computer is always the size of your screen, no matter if it's part of your watch or if it's an entire power plant. It's always the size of the screen, and I need to feel it, especially when water should flow nicely around it. You can model it. There are lots of tools in the CAD with zebra stripes with different colors to analyze the surface, but at the end, nothing is as good as the feeling of your hands, and that's why I print almost everything before I send it, just for a final check. Yeah.
What are the difficulties of such a long mast? I imagine it needs to be super stiff, and the longer it gets,
exactly,
the harder it is, right?
That's it, especially with the thickness. The challenge is the bending and the torsional stiffness. Absolutely. So there's ultra high modulus fibers required to make that happen, and how much and which layup we need to check out right now. But I'm quite optimistic that it will be really nice. Yeah. Not for pumping. It's really something different, but yeah.
It's more for winging or
it's for
kiting.
Winging.
All right. If you have,
it's for the ones that, sorry for,
no, go ahead. Go
interrupting.
Ahead.
It's if you can lean towards the wind, you get a better lever with your weight, like in sailing a keel or a counterweight. So you could put more pressure into the wing. You can go faster with it, not only because it's slimmer, but also because it's longer. And the other thing is that some people really might like it when they have very choppy conditions and you really bounce to all the wave crests on top of them, and you can just fly a little higher without breaching and overcome these choppy conditions. That these are the two cases where I think this mast will make a lot of sense for the people, and people will enjoy it there. Yeah.
If you have a mast like that, do you tell the factory exactly what layers they need to put in, or is that someone else's job? Like what the core is going to be, what kind of high modulus carbon and whatnot?
We define some of it. We have to take what is available at the factory. You can't get any kind of fibers in every factory. And then we talk about it and discuss that and agree on the final layup on the amount of kind of fibers that should be included. I build a mast test bench here, so every prototype gets measured on torsional stiffness and bending stiffness, so that we can compare it with other models and can compare different layups, and then finally agree on the best compromise of price and performance.
Do you get different like prototypes, and then you test them and see when they start breaking? And then you decide which one is stiff enough, because you can break anything or everything.
You can break anything, and breaking and stiffness is not the same. One is the ultimate status, and the other thing is what you feel without going to the ultimate limit. So breaking is mostly done by the team riders on the water, unfortunately. I try to not destroy them by measuring. Of course, we have to destroy a few samples to know what the limit is and to be prepared for the next generation of the mast, and also for quality checks. If a warranty case appears, or too many warranty cases appear in one series, that you can measure the rest and can decide whether the manufacturing might have done something wrong or changed without telling you. And
Yeah. So usually when you give your team riders the stuff or the material, the prototypes, you know some of them are going to break. That's just...
It's depending on who you give it, you will know that the motivation of this rider might be really to break it by on purpose.
We're not calling
it
names.
It sounds... No names, you know them. I can tell you later. No, but I can also tell it because it's a good thing. It sounds really crucial, and you have this new baby there, put everything into it that you knew, a lot of communication. This is really an expensive sample that you have there, and somebody tries to break it on purpose on the water by just the first jump. It sounds crucial, but for the development, it's really valuable and exactly the feedback I need. It doesn't help me at all if somebody's too friendly to the material, and that's not... I don't learn anything from that. Okay. So usually pump boards, pump equipment, everything, I try to give to riders, at least to one rider that is extremely heavy or massive.
You have heavy riders. That was my next question. You have like 110, 120 kilo riders. Wow. Okay. Yeah. It must have been,
not a famous one in the team, but there are also unofficial testers to say, okay. And you can tell them, hey, please give that board a try. And if that lasts, that's always a good sign, and you can continue and step forward. Yeah.
How long is it usually like a cycle like that from you starting to design until it is out for me to buy?
Too long. It's really the case that when I see my products popping up in the social media and people start loving it and using it and giving the feedback, it's for me, it's sad, but it's already old. We have to be already on the next thing and develop further and think further. Often your thoughts on the last products are already evolved and changed a bit, and you get the feedback sometimes too late. So to be concrete, a cycle. The good thing is we always get something by air freight, which is quite fast if it has to go to the container, like the huge amounts of boards and so on. That really takes a long time, again, half a year.
Okay.
Really, with mold manufacturing, so the initial briefing, first concepts, maybe a manual prototype in Europe, testing that, finding the conditions to test it. For a pump foil, that's easy. For a wing foil, it might happen that it takes 2 weeks before there are proper conditions to test it. Test it in different setups, maybe another round of prototypes built in Europe, then preparing the final drawings, the final model, the final drawings, the final graphical design, the tech sheet for the sleeve, specification of the screws, and so on. Then you send all that package to the factory. They have to start building the mold. That usually takes 2 to 6 weeks, depending on the workload. Then they start cutting all the layups and the ply kits, pairing everything.
Yeah, all right. Until half a year is not that final, long, actually.
Yeah, we try to accelerate every cycle we do, and with the knowledge we have and with the good contacts. And I have the feeling that the communication is more fluent from circle to circle. But still, then we have our Christmas holidays, then it's Chinese New Year. There's always, at the end, if you ask me as the manager, I will tell you 2 months. But to be realistic, from the initial briefing until the usual customer can buy it from the web shop or from the dealer, it's half a year.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Jan, for this insight. That was super interesting.
Welcome.
And for all the listeners, the next episode is going to be with Tom Hartmann. If we get him, we had to move around our date quite a couple of times already. He's the face of the GWA, the Global Wing Sport Association, and the SFT, which is the Surf Foil Tour. It's just new. So the pump foil race that we had at the Bolt, that was part of that SFT. I thought it was super spectacular. Still a long way to go until it's really perfect. But I'm really looking forward to talk with him. And that's going to be our next episode. So thank you very much for listening, and see you guys in the next one. Thank you, Jan.
Thank you. Really enjoyed it. Have a nice evening.